title of the talk this afternoon is Underground Listening. And I'd like to just start with calling into question just now how we are here listening, how we're prepared to listen, how we want to listen, what listening is. If listening is partly an unknown to us, if we could let it be an unknown. Recently, I was noticing a way that sometimes we might talk about going to take a rest. We might say, oh, I just need to go and disconnect for a while. So just a use of language, I need to go and disconnect from the way I'm relating to the world or my life right now. And we could also just as easily say, I need to go and connect. I need to go and connect to something else, some other way. And even though it might just be a matter of words, disconnect to connect, I think there's something very worth listening into in those words, in that way of using the words. I'll go disconnect, or I'll go connect. And we could play with that in the way of listening now, for example. We could see if it's possible to disconnect from our usual way of listening, to connect to another way of listening. And to open out all of the questions that could come from there in terms of how we make effort in our spiritual practice. One of the main ways that we make an obstacle for ourselves is that we want to go ahead and get into it. We want to go ahead and get into the meditation, into the practice. We want to get on with it. Before we know much about all of our assumptions about what it means to get on. And so it can be fun and it can help us connect and disconnect. To play with things like just listening to a bird, for example, or a piece of music, even a piece of music that's not live. And to start by just listening in the way that we think of as normal. And then to play with other ways of listening that will come to mind. They will come to your mind. One example could be listening into feeling the person that made or is making the music. Feeling their feet, feeling their hands, feeling their belly, through the listening to the sounds. There are so many ways that might come to your mind if you try this practice. We could listen to the sounds and let the sounds have color. We could listen to what's happening in the belly, or we could listen to where the energy concentrates when we hear the different emotions in the music. Other than being fun, one reason that this could be worthwhile. We could play the same kind of game with any activity, including walking, including eating. Is that we could kind of get behind our scenes, to know more about ourselves and how we go about living. We could see the ways that we guard ourselves in our way of doing things. And if we really look, I think that we'll see that as I habitually allow a kind of protection to come up to try to keep me from feeling so exposed in my way of walking or eating or listening, I can see how that trying to cover and protect is actually a kind of exposure that's uncomfortable enough to make me feel more tension and want to protect more, and then the volume on that protecting keeps going up. And we feel more and more dense and tense. If we could play with different ways of listening, different ways of, just without maybe changing the outer way of walking or eating, just a different focus, feeling the spine while eating, feeling the front of the spine while eating, the back of the spine while eating, listening to the sounds while eating, it's almost infinite, the different ways that we could focus our interest. But playing with a few ways can help us loosen up our assumption that it is normal and that it is needed to go about things the way that we do. We can see how the way that we guard and protect doesn't guard and doesn't protect. And if we really play with this connect-disconnect, kind of maybe falling back a little bit from the ways we're used to connecting to what we do, the ways we're used to relating, connecting then sometimes to something else, and what happens if from there I then allow myself to be open to what seems to be around me. So sometimes we may fall into ourselves in a place that feels genuine. There's a sentence from one of my Tibetan teachers that I like. He says, a feeling of good existence in ourselves. We just stumble upon sometimes a feeling of good existence in ourselves. Sometimes we feel lucky when that happens. We feel we got it right. And sometimes we feel scared of ourselves, to feel how good it is. But if we could make these experiments of finding different ways of trying, different ways of going about our lives, different ways of making effort, it kind of loosens us up so that we're more likely to fall into ourselves and to stumble upon this just good existence in ourselves, a feeling of good existence in ourselves. And whenever possible, if we could let that be our starting point, that from there we move, or are moved. And so even though the main focus so far in the retreat is about really resting and relaxing, and less emphasis on trying to notice how our thinking and our habits run our lives, if we can have enough attention, enough readiness to notice how our thinking and our habits run our lives while we rest and relax, that we can notice this feeling of good existence in ourselves when it happens. Enough relaxing so that it's easier not to believe what the habitual mind says when it blames us or someone else or a circumstance or whatever. And if we could stand with our 2 feet in this feeling of good existence in ourselves, and see if we could be ready to make steps from there without leaving that feeling of good existence. We could come back being ready to connect again from that connection to the feeling. The main problem for us with this is that we will assume that we will already know how to do and what to do and when to do and how much. That we will already know in advance before making the step. But what happens when we have the chance to feel that feeling good, when it's just okay as it is, and we can feel our 2 feet there. If we could not wait to know what we're going to do, what we're going to say, what we're going to hear before we make a step, if we could make a step not knowing, but staying with that feeling, not leaving the feeling to make the step, but not expecting the feeling to be information about what we're going to do and how long, and to let it move the foot, let it make the step. When we do that, when we are with the feeling good in ourselves, it's just a simple feeling where we're not making demands on us. And we let that move us without knowing exactly where we're going or for how long. There's a kind of response that comes. There's a kind of feedback that comes. Which is somehow not only a connection of feeling good within myself. It's feeling how when that feeling good within myself moves me, connects again back to something that seems to be outside of me. It's as if the goodness in myself can connect with the goodness in the world. So last week I was in my garden in Spain, and a friend was with me, and neither of us are experts in gardening, and both of us love to be in the garden. And up till now, so this is the second year in this garden, I've been trying to follow a theory, an idea of not digging, a no-dig garden. And there are reasons for that and everything. There are reasons for anything, any theory that we might want to follow. The reason for not digging is to lose less of the richness of the soil and to find creative ways of letting the soil be ready for more diversity, more plants to grow. Not just by chopping it up. But my friend, who knows as little as I do about gardening, had some experience with doing a little bit of digging. And so we started with my little bitty trowel, my little shovel, trying to make a nice bed for the carrots, who like a very nice bed. If they're going to grow in a shape that you can peel. And eventually, by the next day, I had the big shovel out. I wasn't turning the earth over, but I was opening it with the shovel. So I was in the garden doing something that I really knew I didn't know what I was doing and wasn't sure I wanted to be doing. And so I really kept checking, staying with that feeling good within myself, holding the shovel, and letting the shovel go into the earth until I felt something in myself that said, this is the point This is the point where the tip of the shovel is meeting the right place in the ground. I could be completely wrong. Let's see what happens. But what happened for me outside of the garden was that that feedback feeling, what I'm taking as a feedback feeling in myself, a feeling of goodness within, meeting appropriateness or goodness in an action and in a location under the ground through a shovel. I found that it could come with me everywhere into other things that I don't know much about that I do need to do, it seems, like cooking and eating, walking, driving. And so that enough hesitation and holding back, that we stay with the feeling good within ourselves and we move along kind of really waiting for the feedback from the shovel or from the foot on the pedal in the car or the foot on the ground or the fork or the spoon in the mouth. How far to go in, what angle, how slowly, how quickly. And getting just enough of a kind of response, a kind of sense of a meeting point of goodness with goodness. That it's quite okay not to know and to keep going. So we hold back enough that we're ready to feel feedback. And then that is fun enough that we can keep going. So we don't completely hesitate. A friend of mine is really into Chinese medicine and studying some of the texts translated into English. And she showed me one about what happens when the energy of the heart is fulfilled, is in a state of fulfillment. And the way this text was translated was that one of the things that happens when the energy of the heart is fulfilled is that there is appropriateness. So we're not just kind of loving everyone and everything, but from the loving everyone and everything, including oneself, there's a moment by moment sensing of how much, how long, when, how deep, what color, where, when. This so beautifully applies to just everyday living that I wouldn't want you to miss how it applies to meditation. It really beautifully applies to what we call daily life and to what we call spiritual practice. If we could let it be a field of inquiry, of appropriateness, how much, how long, where, when, what posture, so that we're not just rushing ahead to get in our meditation for the day or our lunch or whatever. We're not questioning so much how long, how much, where, when, that we don't do the thing, but we're leaving it with enough open questions that we can start to feel our way, we can start to feel the tip of the shovel meet that point in the ground. This posture, for now, for today, doesn't have to be for forever or even for tomorrow. With the hand like this, and feeling the goodness meeting the goodness. Does that make sense? There's a quotation from the I Ching, also from Chinese tradition, translated to English. Who knows what it really means in Chinese? It's translated as, "Wisdom," another part of the heart energy, "wisdom discerns the great laws of change and so can bring about enduring conditions. Wisdom discerns the great laws of change, and so can bring about enduring conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Enduring, like lasting, going on and on. Continuity. What we can notice about ourselves is when we let ourselves just go, assuming that, go ahead, like with meditation, for example, assuming that the more we can fit in, the better. Just do it, hurry up, and do as much as you can, whatever posture you happen to land in. What we can notice is that might work well for a day or two, and then it will not work. So, if we could find how much we could back up just a little bit from our hurry and our embarrassment about not knowing how to do it. And be open to what is it that is continuous and that would allow there be to be continuity in the practice. Wisdom accepts that there is change and can see clearly what they call here the laws of change. We could say the patterns of change and the inevitability of change. Things are going to change. The conditions are going to change, and what will allow something to be continuous that needs to be continuous for transformation to happen. So we're not just kind of trying to keep forcing ourselves into the same spot, in the same shape, for the same amount of time, day in and day out. But we are following through. We are doing our practice. We are realizing that we need that quietness as much as we need that lunch, if not more. So even without knowing what the great laws of change are, before we start, we could know that we maybe don't know what they are. But we might know that things will change, conditions will change. Someday, we could really acknowledge that we already know in advance, some days I'm going to really feel like meditating, some days I'm going to really not feel like meditating. And so if I know that, let me find a way that either redefines meditation, deepens my practice, and takes into account those changes. It's not surprised again, like, oh no, I don't feel like meditating. What's wrong with me? I read recently someone who was working with feeling the changes in mood and atmosphere and conditions that go with the moon, the changes of the moon. So this can just be an example for us whether or not we think there are any changes that change with the moon. The idea was that when the moon is getting bigger, things tend to be more opening out and getting bigger. And so it would be like what we want to have expanding, we offer to that atmosphere of expansion. And when the moon is getting smaller, it doesn't mean, oh no, bummer, we have 2 weeks to wait until we can start being expansive again. We can offer into that sense or atmosphere or condition of decrease things that need some help in decreasing, such as our self-hatred or trying too hard. One way to play with that, another way to play with that, could be if we notice that we wake up or we happen to find ourselves in a mood that is critical, a lot of criticism, we could play with offering things that need some criticism into that mood, rather than just blindly criticizing everything. We could think about what is it, okay, this is criticism. Who here needs some criticism in my inner range of characters or habits? Where do I feel like I need some critical edge? Maybe that relationship where I keep repeating the same thing over and over again that doesn't seem to work. And when the criticism is not just blindly pouring forth onto everything that we meet, it could be that some kind of crystal clarity comes through. Just by kind of grabbing hold of that energy that we would otherwise hate, that energy of criticism, by grabbing hold of it and bringing it close. It could be that it starts to kind of join the team. So finding different ways of riding the tides so that our connection to that feeling good within ourselves can be continuous. So at first, continuous might mean more often than last week or last year. Eventually, continuous will be continuous, literally continuous. So if we can hold those two perspectives, not expecting and demanding continuous connection to feeling good within ourselves from now on, what that would lead to would be pretending and disappointment, frustration, blame, etc. Our usual team. So if we could really experiment to notice what more often helps us stumble upon, fall into feeling good within myself, in such a way that there's enough momentum, there's enough emphasis on feeling good within myself, that I let that meet in action, in life, in living, in the aliveness, a feeling good response from the world, so to speak. I walk my path. And at the same time, there's a kind of different kind of demandingness. So we're not demanding of ourselves the impossible, but we're not letting go of a kind of rigor. So that means being gentle with ourselves and being honest and being realistic about the present conditions, about how what is happening within us. Being gentle and honest with what is happening now doesn't mean treating ourselves like babies. It doesn't mean treating ourselves as less than what we are. It doesn't mean pretending that there's not that potential for continuous feeling the goodness within ourselves, being that. Does that make sense? It's hard. It's really, really hard to be with those two. Both of them are almost impossible. So I hesitate to say it, and I say it. It's almost impossible to hear that we could be continuously connected. So connected that it can't be called connection anymore. It's what we are, and we are that. It's hard to hear that and not try to then force ourselves to rush there, which would then be to pretend. It's hard not to pretend, force, frustrate. It's nearly impossible. And so the gentleness is even more needed, so that we could know that we can keep going step by step in the nearly impossible way of being alive. And it's nearly impossible to be that gentle, to let ourselves be that gentleness that accepts that so far the training has been to make us chaotic and predictable. Rather than kind of carefree spontaneous and exactly right on the spot. Relaxed. So finding ways to ride the currents of change in the outer conditions. Outer includes like mind in this case, because inner is that connection, what we really are. The changing moods, the changing weather, the changing people. Finding ways that we don't just give up too soon and think that it's beyond us, beyond our capacity. To do the nearly impossible of being that gentle and that connected to our potential. We go below the blanket of protection that we wear. That we have also been taught to wear. And at first, and many, many times after at first, it feels like just being exposed and in danger. And I don't say this so lightly. Like, it feels like really so much in danger that we could die any second now. But if we could, in this case, when we feel that exposed, in this case, really just notice the sensations. It's just a feeling. It's a feeling that sometimes goes right along with feeling the goodness within ourselves, with feeling a goodness of existence in ourselves. Sometimes feeling good within ourselves is just, ah. Sometimes feeling good existence within ourselves is a shock. It puts off the alarms. And we turn away. And so this is our real practice. This is really where we practice. And where any other practice that we do comes in handy. That momentum helps us stay under the blanket of protection. Stay under it with our connection, with the feeling of good existence, with the feeling exposed. Letting the blanket fall away, sometimes we feel shy or even ashamed. The kind of thing this could feel like is we don't know what we're doing and we think we should know. Sometimes it's a more kind of guttural or gut kind of feeling of just, I can hardly stand to be that exposed. It could be not just not knowing, like not knowing what to do or something like that, but not even knowing myself and thinking I should. So we've let go the blanket of protection where I think I know what I am. And that's important. That's an important moment to acknowledge. I do not know what I am. I do not know what this is. I do not know what we're doing. And I'm working with a shovel in a garden that I love. And then we could let that exposure meet something in intimacy. Again and again and again. the blanket of protection of right and wrong, taking as something trivial, something we could see it like the outer leaves of a corn of cob. Maybe they were protecting something before, but now that the corn is ripe, we need to remove them. We need to dare to remove the husk. See it as a husk and remove it. Husk is that those papery leaves on the outside of what gives the nourishment. Otherwise, what tends to happen is, even in our meditation, or even especially in our meditation, where really we are in intimacy with not only myself, but with each other and with life, it would be easy to keep practicing husk. Thinking that we know what we're doing. It could even be, I could even maybe go so far as to say, if I think I know what I'm doing when I think I'm meditating, maybe I'm practicing the husk and not the nourishment, not the food. Maybe I'm giving energy to what covers the truth, with what keeps me from eating what I need to eat. And at the same time, we have our kind of feeling good within ourselves, meeting the goodness. There's a kind of feedback. It's not that we're completely, completely lost. We don't know exactly why we're using a shovel in a no-dig garden sometimes. But we can listen for that point of meeting, for that response. And if I can take this metaphor of the corn a little bit even further, it's not that we need to like rip off the outer layers and expose the corn and then devour it. It could be that we find our way without even taking off those leaves. We find our way in. And we add ourselves into that life, into that aliveness. A little bit like going into a womb. Where we stay. But it's not like a regressively going back to that womb that we already came out of. It's a place that if we can let ourselves feel the vulnerability, then we can stay. And if we cannot let ourselves feel the vulnerability, we cannot stay. If we can stay, we are more and more in touch with that power of our potential. That has joy in it, that is carefree, but it is not without care. It is totally caring. And so being then, again, inside the caring, we keep going inside and inside. And if we keep letting ourselves not know what I am and not know what I'm doing, maybe afterwards I can look back and tell what I did. But while I'm doing it, while we are doing this, we cannot say what we're doing. We don't know what we're doing. We just have that other kind of knowing where we feel the shovel touch. That other kind of listening. And by letting ourselves know we don't know what even what I am. And still letting our energy be guided and directed. Very clearly, specifically, simply, humbly, step by step. All that we thought we were not can flower. All of those kind of rays of goodness that we thought I'm not. I'm not that brave, I'm not that smart, I'm not that kind, I'm not that trusting. And something other than just me and my conscious experience has a chance to take over. And if we keep letting myself stay in that womb of life, womb of aliveness. If you can see what I mean, that it doesn't matter anymore if those husks, those leaves of protection are there or not there, because we're so far inside aliveness. So it's just enough awareness about the ways I've habitually protected myself to dance past them inside. Not knowing how. If I knew how, I would be trying to tell myself how, and that would get in the way. It would take also one extra step too long. It's just more direct action. Even if the direct action is lying down and not moving. Something other than me and my experience, my conscious experience, starts to act on us as well as in us and through us. And this is another terrible part. It's terrifying. Because often our experience of power, like our deep experience of power, what we call power, is so destructive. And so we'd rather just not touch anything powerful ourselves directly. Often those of us who feel sensitive and love and long to love fully, our habitual response to anything powerful is so easily just like to get distance from it. But when we get inside it, is when transformation occurs. And a lovely thing about the transformation, and also why it's called power, why it's also scary, is that the transformation is not just about me and my conscious experience of life. It's not contained within what I think I am. This transformation power, this transformation fact. It sparks out and it touches in unexpected people and ways and times. So it's like a very sparky appropriateness. Where, when, how long, how much, with whom. I'd just like to end with a quotation from a woman from France called the Mother, who lived in India most of her life, I think. She's talking about this, we could say, moment, this appropriateness, this moment, this being inside aliveness. She's calling it love. Love has no need to destroy. We could call it freedom. Freedom has no need to destroy in order to transform. Love has the direct power of transformation. So even what we hate and think might deserve our hatred in us or outside of us. Doesn't need our hatred, needs our love. It needs our courage to be in this direct contact with this feeling of good existence in ourselves and how that meets something that we could say is even deeper when it moves us, when it moves ourselves into contact. What I mean by moving is moves us beyond what we thought we were, moves us beyond our habits. Because movement might be happening in physical stillness, of course. Are there any questions?
I have a question about the power.
Yeah.
But I don't know what my question is.
Okay.
But it's about the trust in the power. Is it that it is more like that it is so powerful that you cannot recognize it or dare to recognize it as yourself, because the world and yourself telling you there is no power, and then you feel power, you feel a lot of power, and you are afraid to step in because there's something in you that says, no, this cannot be me, or you. Or.
Mm-hmm.
So my question, I don't know what my question is, but it's in that area.
Yeah. It's also a good area to keep our questions kind of on the fire, keep them cooking. Because the first part, what you said, Rose, is like, is it a power that's bigger than me, something like that. And there is a way that it is too big to fit in our skin, and it isn't only me. And there's a way that life invites me, welcomes me into that anyway. It's not me, and it's not mine. And also, what I thought I am doesn't match that. And I can step right into it. And I can let it step right into me, and I can let it make my steps for me. So many different ways of letting it act on us, through us, in us. And there's a way also that it's just so much more simple than if we would start to make this like, whoa, that big power, into a thing that's scary. It's also just the simple, like really in the garden with the shovel, with the plate and the spoon, and how many potatoes. And what is the potato, what happens when it goes into my mouth? The courage, like, is also like a kind of a wow, like, that there could be that much wonder in an ongoing basis, eating a potato. And then that the wonder and the power is also not about me and the potato, too. That I'm, even if the potato is with me, this is where that connection and disconnection, it's like the yin and yang, like they keep meeting and overlapping and popping up inside each other, connection and disconnection. I could disconnect from my sense experience in order to connect with what makes sense experience alive. And then I'm free to stay in contact with something that's not sense experience, that doesn't, we could say, doesn't care. But allowing it there to be that enormous caring beyond myself that passes right through me and the potato and into that vastness in the potato while never leaving home. and meeting home along the way. So what I really mean to say is, if we keep it open and try to feel what is trustworthy, simple, trustworthy in our experience. And sometimes just to let that kind of listening happen between my depth and the depth. Letting that direct communication happen. Any other question or comment? So we have time for walking meditation, or just walking. And then at 6:30, a kind of sweet half an hour before dinner, back in the hall. Thank you.